The Jewish Hour is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher, smart radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We got a great show for you. New book just came out called When Grant Expelled the Jews. This is for all you Civil War buffs who want to know about Judaism in the Civil War. Yep, we got it for you right here. This is, we have the author on. Terrific stuff. The portion of the week this week is the portion of Tazria, which is the portion which is in chapter 12 and following in the book of Leviticus. We got lots of a cappella music coming at you this week. The dynamic Hasidic story at the end. Don't even think about touching the dial before, if you have a dial or the button, whatever it is, until the end, until you hear the story. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A terrorist threw 7 firebombs at Jewish homes last night on Jerusalem's Mount of Olives, causing a fire to break out in one of them. The compound's security guards fired in the air, causing him to flee. Security forces are still looking for the suspect. This is really, I read this and I just almost fell apart. And this is one of the saddest stories. And it's makes my blood boil, too. A 20-year-old woman was killed Wednesday when a lighting pole collapsed on a stage during rehearsals for this week's Independence Day celebrations on Mount Herzl. 4 people, including an engineer, external construction company security advisor, and the 2 company owners, were arrested and charged with manslaughter by negligence and forgery. Somebody didn't do their homework in getting that light pole up. And she was crushed to death. It's terrible. I'm besides myself. In other news, a Palestinian Authority Arab accidentally set himself on fire Tuesday while attacking Israeli security forces with a firebomb outside Ofer prison. Now, what a firebomb means is it's a bottle full of gasoline with a wick in it. And what this y'all did was he probably turned the bottle upside down and was about to throw it. And the gasoline, which is now on fire, like went all over him. The violent protests and attacks were part of Palestinian Authority's Prisoners' Day. The man was, ironically enough, treated for burns at his local Israeli hospital. 2 Arab men were arrested in connection with the stabbing of an Orthodox boy in Jerusalem on Thursday evening. The incident occurred near the tomb of Shimon HaTzadik. The boy is recovering nicely. The anti-Israel fly-in, which we talked about last week, they're expecting 1,500 people, was a media flop. 47 people were arrested, dozens were deported, and many more were not allowed onto planes from France, Spain, and England. 2 detainees painted a swastika in the room they were being held before being deported. So much for peaceful-minded people. Several dozen residents of the Palestinian Authority attempted to riot near the city of Ramallah on Tuesday. Israeli forces successfully stopped them by using water cannon and rubber bullets. A Palestinian family was evicted from 2 homes in an eastern Jerusalem neighborhood after an Israeli court ruled that Jews had legally purchased the properties. The Israel Land Fund plans to establish a Jewish enclave of 50 apartments in that neighborhood in northeastern Jerusalem. Schult Barath, a Hungarian parliamentarian, is under investigation for remarks he made. Barath introduced a bill commemorating the 100th anniversary of the disappearance of a young girl, which led to a blood libel. 4 Jews were eventually proven innocent of all charges. Prime Minister Viktor Orban met with the Jewish community leaders of Hungary and assured them that Hungary's 100,000 Jews are safe. And finally, the U.S. House of Representatives voted unanimously to award Raoul Wallenberg the Congressional Gold Medal. Wallenberg, a Swedish diplomat in Budapest during the German occupation in 1944, issued Swedish travel documents known as Wallenberg passports to at least 20,000 Jews and also set up more than 30 safe houses for Jews. The Senate must also vote on the measure, and that's the news. Do you know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. I'm on live with Jonathan Sarney, author of When General Grant Expelled the Jews. How are you today, Jonathan?
Good morning. Very well.
Good to hear. Good to hear. I have to tell you a story. When I first saw the first reviews of When Grant Expelled the Jews, I was immediately thrown back to fifth grade. I had a fifth grade teacher who was a Civil War buff. He was a very smart man. This man had one of these like brains that held everything. And he would convey like zillions of pieces of information. And I remember one telling me, we're actually up to the point in fifth grade, we were studying about the Civil War. And he said to me, Finman, did you know that General Grant actually issued a proclamation dispelling Jews from his territories under his command? And from that moment on, I hated General Grant. I mean, you understood. That's as far as we got, because we didn't. The unit ended with the Civil War, and we never actually got to do General Grant's presidency. So I always had in mind that General Grant was like probably the worst president that ever existed. And here I'm reading your book, and it's a pleasure to have you on. And let's talk about General Grant and the Jews, Jonathan Sarney.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I think most people, even most Jewish encyclopedias to this day, know the story the way you described it. But the interesting thing is that late 19th century Jews didn't feel that way about Grant, and that's why when he died, he was very widely mourned across the country and in really all synagogues. They considered him someone who had been a national hero and who repented of what he had done. So they had much more positive views of Grant than most people have today in the Jewish community.
Indeed, indeed. Let's go back to the beginning. We're talking here. This is the 1862. This is we're in the throes of the Civil War, and at this point in history, I suppose it looked like it could really go either way. We could be all whistling Dixie right now instead of the Star Spangled Banner if we're living in 1862. And Grant issues what's referred to as General Order Number 11. I was under the impression as a 10-year-old it was called General Order because it was issued by General Grant. That would be my assumption.
Well, I mean, different generals also issued orders, but it was the 11th order that he issued. Each general had his own set, so you have General Order Number 11 of other people as well. But in this case, it is the 11th such general order that Grant issued.
Okay, let's for people who are not Civil War buffs, what's going on? Where is Grant? And what's the whole, if you could just like paint the picture that General Grant, who is trying to win a war, is faced with right now, Jonathan.
Sure. We're in 1862. That means it's prior to the Battle of Vicksburg, which really is going to establish his reputation. He is beginning his move on Vicksburg. He's in Holly Springs. He is a little depressed. Hasn't yet had a major victory. Isn't on the best of terms with General Halleck, who is the commander in chief. And he believes that the best way for the North to win the war is to enforce this blockade of the South. He's, of course, a great believer in sieges, as Vicksburg will prove. And instead of the blockade, what he discovers is that all sorts of people are running the blockade, are smuggling, are making lots of money. His troops capture a certain number of Jews engaged in that activity. And he concludes that the Jews are smugglers. And, of course, he gets particularly angry, as I describe, when his own father, Jesse Grant, cooks up a scheme with the clothing manufacturers, the Max, Henry Harmon and Simon, whereby he will get them permits from his son to move cotton from the South to the North, and will help them get it to New York, and in return, they will give him 25% of the profits. And those profits were very substantial. Cotton sold cheaply in the North and was very expensive in the South. So when he sees that his own father is engaged in a clandestine illegal scheme with Jews, he, in high dudgeon, issues an order expelling Jews as a class from his war zone. In many ways, instead of expelling his father, he expels the Jews.
He's got to go home to dad once in a while. Yeah,
so, I mean, that's the occasion. I think the cause, as I said, is broader. His deep unhappiness, as many others were unhappy, with the amount of smuggling between the South and the North, and the inability to really maintain the blockade that he thought would win the war. He
felt
that these were traitors. Yeah.
Okay. Now we need some more background information over here. 1862 is still before the mass migration of Jews from Europe to the United States. How many Jews lived in the United States approximately?
The Jewish unity had been growing rapidly owing to immigration from Central Europe. We had about 150,000 Jews in the United States on the eve of the Civil War, up from, say, 15,000 in 1840. So it gives you a sense of how rapidly the community was growing, almost all of them Jews from Germany and Poland.
Uh-huh. There is a rapid rise in 20 years. What's the general population of the United States at that time? Approximately,
the general population is much more. Jews are approximately. I've got that number here.
I mean, Jews are currently 3% of the population.
Approximately half of 1%.
Half of 1%. So now we've grown to like to be 3%. Okay, so they're a very small minority. General Grant at this time, if you're talking Vicksburg is Mississippi you're talking about currently. So how many Jews are in his, they call them departments, in his territory?
Right. Well,
this is the western part of the United States
area,
at that point.
Memphis, Tennessee, was part of his department, and that had several hundred Jews, some of them clearly there to trade, to smuggle, whatever, but that had a significant community. You had about 30 families in Paducah, and then you had a whole series of Jews who were there as traders. There's certainly...
That's traders with a D, not traders with a T.
Yeah,
yes.
With a D, right. You certainly had thousands of Jews, several thousand within the territory, but far fewer are actually expelled. That's one of the mysteries I faced while researching it. Why, hey, Grant issues an order. How come all the Jews weren't driven out of Memphis? And the answer, I suggest here, is that very soon after he issues the order, his troops are attacked And as part of that attack, a lot of the telegraph lines are cut, and so news of the order travels very slowly. And of course, nobody in Washington even knows of the order because the telegraph lines are down, and that will become quite significant later when we see Caesar Kaskel, who's one of those Jews expelled, going to Washington, and they haven't seen this order at all. They're not even sure that such an order has been issued. They don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so much for communications. Yes, indeed. So the amount, the number of people who are actually affected by General Order Number 11 issued by General Ulysses S. Grant wasn't very many, but the provocation was there. It was sort of like I could imagine Jews who had left Europe to the promised land where it was paved with gold and all you had to do was pick up the stuff and put it in your pocket and anybody could go and, you know, become like a great American, are suddenly now faced with expulsions like they've been getting for 1,000 years in Europe. It must have rang very high. Very high among Jews.
And the anxiety is enormous. I think the Jews felt... you know, this wasn't the kind of thing that should happen in America. And frankly, had Abraham Lincoln not reversed the order, who knows how many Jews would have been expelled and whether other generals would have issued like orders. So what's important here really is the fact that as soon as Lincoln becomes aware of the order, he rescinds it.
Okay, so Lincoln gets there's a few bit of politicking. Lincoln rescinds the order because he's not going to have such a thing happening on his watch. At what point did it hit Grant that he had done the wrong thing by expelling the Jews?
Well, it's hard to know exactly. He certainly criticized in Congress for the order at the time in 1863, but I think it really comes home to him in 1868 when he runs for president and suddenly his opponents make a big deal about this order. How can a man who wanted to expel Jews as a class from his war zone considered the right kind of person to be president of the United States? And the order is much discussed. And after Grant is elected, he issues an apology that he doesn't sustain this order. It shouldn't have been issued. He wants everybody to be judged as an individual, and it's a kind of unprecedented apology from a man who's just been elected president. You may ask why he didn't issue it before. Apparently, some people had seen it before, but in those days, a candidate didn't want to be seen as pandering for the votes of a particular group. Mm-hmm. He thought that wasn't respectable, so he issues it later. Now, I, of course, wondered, well, anybody can issue a letter. What we really judge is by a man's actions. And that's why his presidency is so important, because we can really see from 1869, when he enters the White House onwards, how his actions demonstrate that he's a different kind of person. He has a Jewish advisor. He appoints Jews to significant positions in government. Mm-hmm. And when Jews are oppressed in Russia and in Romania, he speaks out and even takes action in order to support them.
Okay, I want to talk about this soon, but let me just one second before we get into that. Just I have one question for our guest. If you're just tuning in, is Jonathan Sarney, who's written a book called "When General Grant Expelled the Jews." This is a Civil War history book. It's a fascinating read. It's a great read. I did it in three sittings, I would say myself, and was just spellbound to it. Let's go a little bit before. One question about the election. You brought up that General Order Number 11, expelling the Jews from Grant's territory as a general during the Civil War, was brought up during the election campaign by his opponents. Was Horace Greeley, who was his opponent, was he a known, philo-Semite? Was he known as a lover of Jews, or is just this was a political ploy? They really, if it would have been, they really didn't care about Jews.
Well, in 1868, Horatio Seymour Greeley is his opponent in 1872. But I think the 1868 election is even more significant. Seymour had been governor of New York. What's important about the Democrats, that is the opponents of Grant, is frankly that they're an openly racist party that at that time that wanted to overturn Reconstruction, wanted to withdraw troops in the South, really made clear, in their words, that America should be a white man's country, and
most likely a white Christian man's country.
Well, they're right. They disassociated themselves, so didn't want black votes. Seymour, when he is nominated, says that if elected, he will prevent the people of our race from being driven out of the country or trodden underfoot by an inferior and semi-barbarous race. We have forgotten the kind of language that once was used in this country. And of course, that's important because imagine Jewish voters in 1868. On the one hand, you have a party that is openly racist, that is deeply conservative, that wants to undo laws that had opened up possibilities for blacks. And on the other hand, you had a man running as a Republican who had expelled Jews as a class from his war zone. So for Jews who were sympathetic to the aims of the Republican Party, the problem was, do you vote for a party that you think is bad for the country, meaning the Democrats, just in order to avoid voting for a man, Ulysses S. Grant, who has been very bad for the Jews? And it really posed a tough conundrum for many Jews. Do I vote in this election with my American hat on? Do I vote with my Jewish hat on? How do I balance my sense of what's good for the country and my sense of my obligations as a Jew?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so you mentioned that there were major problems going on in Romania with the Jews. There was all kinds of things going on, and Romanian Jews needed a haven. And General Grant stepped up to the plate. Could you explain that, please, Jonathan?
Yeah. Romania is seeing very significant persecutions of Jews. There are people in the Romanian parliament who think it would be good to throw all the Jews into the Danube, something they try and do years later in the Holocaust. There is outrage in the papers, and Ulysses S. Grant does an amazing thing, really. He appoints a Jew named Benjamin Franklin Peixoto from a famous Sephardic Jewish family as consul to Romania. It is perfectly clear that Peixoto is going to spend much of his time helping and supporting the Jewish community. And the letter that Grant gives Peixoto really makes clear that he is being allowed to serve as consul so that he can work for the benefit of the people who are laboring under severe oppression, meaning the Jews, he says that, the United States, knowing no distinction of her own citizens on account of religion or nativity, naturally believe in a civilization the world over, which will secure the same universal liberal views. That's an amazing statement in many ways, because most countries at that time had the attitude, you do not interfere. Do not interfere in the internal actions of other countries. Human rights was not on the agenda of most countries. And suddenly, Grant is arguing that we believe in a civilization that will secure human rights and religious rights, especially to all people. And we know that Peixoto actually spent most of his efforts on behalf of Romania's Jews. So even the use of diplomacy to help a persecuted minority was something quite extraordinary and unprecedented at that time.
Did it have its desired effect?
Well, I can't say that anti-Semitism ended on account of Grant's views, obviously.
And there was no mass immigration to
Avon. Right, but on the other hand, this man spends 5 years in Romania, I do think that what's important here is that he helps Jews. He spreads the idea that America is a very different kind of land, and that, of course, explains why lots of Romanian Jews later emigrate to the United States. And I think the fact that a proud and self-identifying Jew represented the United States in Bucharest delivered a message that America is different, and certainly it underscored the fact that Grant had come a long way from the general who expelled Jews as a class from his war zone.
Mm-hmm. We're unfortunately running out of time. I got a couple bunches of more questions on this because I'm just absolutely inspired by this. But after he would be after his presidency, General and Mrs. Grant went on a tour around the world, and one of their stopping points was Israel, which he hated because at that point it wasn't even a third world country. Was his feeling a need of going to Israel a part of this whole repentance for General Order Number 11, or was it more just an idea of wanting to go visit the place which we consider the birthplace of his religion?
Well, I think probably the latter. Quite a few Americans, think of Mark Twain, travel to the Holy Land once steam becomes available and you could travel safely to foreign countries. But he does meet with Jews while he's in the land of Israel, and that's significant. We should also mention he's the first president to attend the dedication of a synagogue, Addis Israel, in Washington, that even at the very end of his presidency. Even later in his life, in 1881, when, of course, there are terrible persecutions of Jews, the pogroms in Russia, Ulysses S. Grant is one of the first to put his name forward on a petition to support Jews and to call for a demonstration against what was being done to them. So really, to the very end of his life, we see see Grant having a kind of special relationship with Jews. He also befriended lots of Jews. And I think that's why they mourned him deeply. They understood that he had repented. It's only in the 20th century when Grant's general reputation falls like a stone, and he's blamed for, especially by Southerners, for his liberal policies of Reconstruction and for a lot of the problems that take place during his presidential years, that the Jewish community forgets that this man had repented. And they say, oh, in addition to all the other bad things he's accused of, he was bad to the Jews as well. The hope of my book is to recall the other side of the story, which Jews certainly remembered when he died and for some years afterwards.
Mm-hmm. That's going to do it. And I also want to thank you for clearing up the age-old question of who's buried in Grant's tomb.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is...
Yes.
Nobody.
The answer is nobody, because he was entombed in Grant's tomb, not buried. Groucho Marx's question was always good for a laugh.
Indeed. Okay, I want to thank you so much again. The book, When General Grant Expelled the Jews, by Jonathan Sarnes, by Schock and Books, available where fine literature can be procured. And thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We're going to cut up for you next. This is Bitachon, classic Jewish a cappella. This comes off a 1996 CD. This is Lecha Doidi, one of their standards. The group doesn't even exist anymore, but it's a great song. And for those who really wanted to know why we're doing a cappella, is during the weeks between Passover and Shavuos, Jews observe a quasi-mourning period, as the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, you're talking around sometime around year 50 or so, died due to some sort of strange, contagious plague, and as a remembrance to them. So that's a lot of people who die suddenly in like a 33-day period. So we refrain from cutting our hair, getting married, listening to music unless it's vocal, and eating fruit that we haven't had in quite a while, for example. Anything that's going to make us feel really happy. Oh, look, I haven't had one of these in quite a while. So, but we don't have to be miserable. We can enjoy our morning, you might say. So I hope you're enjoying your morning, too, with a cup of coffee, the Times, maybe, whatever it is that you happen to be in front of you, listening to the Jewish Hour, of course. Let's stop what we're talking about right now and listen right to Bitachon.
Do, 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 oh, 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 oh Holistic Healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HIGH-HIGH.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. There's a group of girls, high school girls, who are living in Chicago, who listen to the Jewish Hour on RabbiFinman.com. And every once in a while, especially during these a cappella seasons, they seem to have requests. And I appreciate, it's a group, I don't know how many there are, maybe four or five, six of them are listening around, because it is Sunday and they don't have school. And they wanted to hear 613, that's the name of the group, and the 613 group did a song called The Shabbos Song. And so everybody else gets to listen in as I play a song for the girls from Chicago. The Shabbos Song.
Oh, it's time for saying good Shabbos. Yeah. Wish you a Shabbos that is better than you ever had before. No, no, we wish you good Shabbos. Yeah. Saying good Shabbos, yeah. We'll say good Shabbos cause we've waited all week long. No, no, we wish you good Shabbos, yeah.
Yes, we can. 25 hours, don't make no plans. Challah, chulun, and I said it's one. And my kiddush got all that I need is this one day. That's what's up. It's an ancient concept. Our Torah talking about what God said. I've been waiting for this all week long. How many matzah balls you want? Yeah, I got the Shabbos spirit. I feel it so strong. From the minute of the kiddush to bit kind of my zones. Mirror voices joining in song. Keep the music going all night long. Sit down, relax, I want to impress. Life's hard and time to distress. Thank God for my weekly refresh. Man, I love me some Shabbos Kodesh.
Oh, it's time for saying good Shabbos. Yeah. Wish you a Shabbos that is better than you ever had before. No, no, we wish you could Shabbos, yeah.
such a good feeling. Oh, 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 you had a good shower. Yeah. You had a shower that is better than you ever, ever had before. No, no, you had a good shower. Yeah.
This is Frank Lovasco with Lovasco Concrete Services. We specialize in driveways and patios. You can call me at 586-822-9985.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We actually used Lovasco. I want to let you know that if you hear advertising on the Jewish Hour, it's because they've received the Jewish Hour seal of approval, you might say. We don't advertise schlach on this station, on this program. Absolutely not. Larry Lovasco, he's a class guy, comes from Brooklyn and everything, and the man knows cement, let me tell you. Coming up next, we got one room for one more. This is the back Maccabees doing the Book of the Good Life, and let's listen in.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
You know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile.
Herschel Finman here. The time is just fleeting away. This week is a portion of Tazria. It's in the book of Leviticus, chapter 12. Most of it, this week and next week, deals with the plague of Tsaras, which is a skin disease. Interesting thing about it, I'm just going to give a little allegory since we don't have so much time about it. If a person had this spot, he would go to the Kohen, the priest, and he would declare this person, you've got it, and the person would have to leave the camp. He'd have to leave town and go sit and be out there all by himself by his lonesome because he had done something wrong, which the Almighty was basically saying, you got to get your act together. If the person broke out in head to toe in spots, was totally, completely covered, then he was declared as needing a dermatologist and did not have this malaise. As an allegory to this, it says that in the end of days, in the time of preparing for the Mashiach, it says all nations will be heretical, and then the Messiah will be, Hashem will bring the Messiah. So it's an interesting idea. It says when the world is, it's two ways of looking at it. When the world is so bad that there's no other place where to go, the Almighty says, okay, now it's time for the Mashiach. But there's another place, another way of looking at it. Because the spots were white specifically. They weren't red. It was white. White is a color of purity. White is a color of repentance. As it says, if your sins are red like crimson, I will whiten them like snow in forgiveness. So if that be the case then, it could very well be that the world could be so refined that it would not be able to tolerate the corruption of the governments, which is promised in the prophets. And therefore, out of great impressiveness, the Almighty will bring the Messiah. Let's hope that it happens today. We have to back out. Let's listen to this next commercial. Don't go away. We got the story coming up. You're listening
to Jim Hiller. At Hiller's, we support all things Michigan, which is why we support the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com, RabbiFinman.com. You'll find archived editions of the show. You'll find writings, insights into the portion of the week in Hasidic stories on the eParsha page. On the uParsha page, you'll find videos posted to YouTube, also insights check them out, and check out the all-important donations page. It comes to our attention that actually the vast majority of the show is sponsored by people like you. So go ahead and click it. You'd be glad you did. We got a quick story. It involves Levi Yitzhak Berdichev. This week's portion, the first thing it talks about, the first mitzvah in this portion involves the mitzvah of milah, circumcision. There was a man who was a cattle trader who happened on the side, happened to do the circumcision, specially trained for it. And the price of cattle fell through the floor. So this guy got a little nervous, and he ran to the rabbi and said, "Rabbi, I'm going to lose my pants with all of these cattle that I have over here." The rabbi said to him, you're a moil, you're a circumcised. He says, yeah. He says, here's this medicine I have. It just came out. And if you have a baby who bleeds, put this on the wound, and it'll be, take care of everything. He says, what about the candle, the cattle? He said, I told you, if the problem exists with the baby, you put this on the baby. So the guy understood something's going to happen over here. On his way home, He stopped off at an inn and found that the innkeeper's third son had not been circumcised because the first two children had died as a result of the circumcision, and the rule is you don't circumcise it. He said, I got the stuff for it. Guy said, you can circumcise my son on condition that you stay here for 4 weeks to make sure that nothing goes wrong. Made the deal. They circumcised the kid. There was a little bleeding. They put the stuff on. Everybody's fine. A week goes by. The price of cattle goes through the ceiling. He says, I got to go sell my cattle. He says, you said 4 weeks. Another week goes by. The price of cattle goes even higher. By the end of 4 weeks, this guy's price, he had made more than he could possibly have thought. That's the story. I want to thank you for tuning in. We're back out graciously. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Listeners are discovering a way to earn money. We're talking quit your nowhere job and work from home type of money. Income at HomeUSA.com has come to us for listeners who want to work